Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of Jiggle Physics, an Android Central podcast side quest. We made it to 3 episodes. We survived the first 2 episodes.
I just still can't believe that's the name we settled on.
I know.
I mean, once it was said and y'all were like, yep, that's the one, I didn't even fight it. I'm no, super down. It. And just so everyone's clear, was not my idea.
No, it was not.
I fully support it.
I forget whose idea it actually was.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back and screenshot that because at some point there's going to need to be evidence. But not only do we have a great title to a really fun show, we actually got a really cool email that I want to start the show off with from Travis from Melbourne, Australia, who actually dropped us an email and said that he's been listening to the Android Central podcast for a long time and that he's a huge fan of the stuff that we've started doing, talking about gaming stuff through this this little side podcast. So that was super cool. Travis, if you're listening to this, we deeply appreciate your entire face.
Yeah, thank you, Travis. It's people forget that sometimes sending just a quick compliment can make someone's day.
Yeah, it really made my day.
And just to let everyone else know, I have zero shame. The more emails you send, the more of them I will read out loud for my own edification. So go for it.
Yeah, my ego also could use constant validation.
Yeah. Just never stop. Just keep it going. So we do actually have some game things to talk about this week. I actually wanted to start with you, Carly, because you have been traveling quite a bit for game stuff. And the last one was Ghost Recon.
Yep. Ghost Recon Breakpoint.
Is it a new game or is it still the same Ghost Recon that it has been for 10 years?
Surprisingly, it's kind of different.
Awesome.
Which was surprising to me. I really don't like Wildlands as a game. I think it gets repetitive pretty quickly. Despite the large map, it can still feel confined and the story's bad. But I don't know. I haven't played enough of Breakpoint yet to really break it down, even though I played like 6 hours of it. But there's so much in this game. Like, there's so much to do. The multiplayer is actually there at launch and, you know, is good. You know, you have a much better story, better character customization options. You've got just a ton of different quests to do, main quests, side quests, everything. And then they've even doubled down on some of the tactician elements and then added some survival game elements in there too, like crafting and healing and things like that. I'm a little worried that there might be too much in this game.
I'm a little confused there. The crafting and healing, is that stuff, do you feel like that's probably just for storyline stuff, or is that actually going to get used in multiplayer environments?
Well, the healing stuff, there's a new injury system in this game, which basically means, like, if you get shot in the leg, for instance, you'll limp, so you'll move slower, or, like, if you get shot in the arm, you won't hold your gun as well. And you have to, like, you know, find a safe place, and you can heal with the bandages, or you can use the crafting system to pick up, like, herbs throughout the environment and craft healing items for yourself to use. And then there's a bivouac system, I think that's how it's pronounced, where you can set up like a temporary camp and eat, drink, get buffs, craft. It's, you know, it's not really like a story thing. It's definitely more of a gameplay thing, but it's fascinating how they managed to get that in there, basically, is how I feel.
I'm kind of really amused at the idea of dropping down in on someone as they've set up a little campsite for themselves to finish the job. Like, I feel like that's going to be a thing we're going to see at some point in videos.
Yeah, unfortunately, multiplayer doesn't have the bivouac system, but I know.
That would have been hilarious.
But it does have the healing stuff still goes over to multiplayer, so you can ambush someone while they're trying to heal and just screw their day up. And I think you can only set up a bivouac system in certain areas along the map that aren't probably in enemy areas. So unfortunately, you won't get like a cool cutscene where y'all are just chilling around the campfire and someone sneaks up behind you and just like takes out the entire squad or something.
Well, that's just a lack of creativity.
I know. Maybe there'll be a mod. Who knows?
That would be fun.
Good fan fiction. But yeah, like, I don't know. I think it's definitely the story. Like, all the changes they made to the story definitely have made me accept Breakpoint a bit better. First of all, it takes place on a fictional island, not a real place. So there's no, like, you know, baggage there. No, like, weird, like, politics that people are trying to interpret and interpret poorly.
No attempt to shoehorn in actual history.
Exactly. It's very, like, the story is basically a tech CEO has set up a utopian island in the middle of the Pacific for his, like, drone-based utopia. And then John Barenthal and his group of wolves, which are, like, rogue U.S. soldiers, come in. They kind of screw everything up. And then your character has a history with him and is off to, like, you know, figure out, like, who's behind all the drones that are kind of, like, sucking up the island and taking down boats and airplanes and keeping everybody on the island. And it's a much more straightforward story. And I think the fact that it's based in fiction definitely makes a lot of it easier to swallow, because it's tough to do a game that, like, a war game, and include, like, politics stuff in it when you don't want to really delve too deep into the politics of it. And that's kind of where Wildlands screwed up, I think. Like, just a very bizarre, semi-racist story about Bolivia.
Not great.
No, and having a fictional island kind of erases a lot of potential baggage, and it's much nicer. And having a fictional island means that the game developers can set up environments that don't actually make any sense next to each other, which is more of a gameplay thing than anything, but I think works for the players, especially because I know a lot of players like snow environments and, you know, different kinds of biomes to play around in. So yeah, that's Breakpoint.
Well, cool. This definitely sounds like a way better experience than some of the previous Ghost Recon games from not all that long ago.
Yeah, like, I've only really played Wildlands, like, more in depth. I played, like, a little bit of some of the other ones. And I can say it's definitely a huge improvement. And my only concern maybe is that, like, some of the elements might not mesh together super well, or that the story might not be narratively satisfying. But that's, you know, something we'll figure out when we actually get to the full release. So
cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rebecca's actually not here with us this week, so I'm going to pick on Jen. We had
great.
Nintendo announced 900 million things this week.
They did.
So many things.
Including basically an entire another game worth of Super Smash Brothers characters, with just an enormous roster being included in, including one that that caused two of my children to jump up and start celebrating, which is Sans from Undertale is a skin for the Wii Gunner, or the Mii Fighter Gunner character.
Can you explain why everyone loves that character so much?
No,
Undertale.
I know. Yeah.
Okay, look, I haven't played Undertale. I'm sorry.
That's the problem. You don't play. You haven't played Undertale. Like,
I mean, there are a ton of other games I don't play, but I don't see people latching on to a character like that. Like, Tumblr lost its shit.
Well, that's because Tumblr loves Undertale. I think if you played Undertale, you'd understand it a bit better. But he's a fun character in the context of the game, but also the game itself inspires a certain fandom, I think. So that fandom was like, oh my god.
It's a very interesting fandom.
Yeah, plus, like, people have been wanting Undertale stuff in Smash. So then when that actually came up, people were like, oh my god, we did it.
Yeah, that's true. I saw posts from a year or two ago, or whenever the game was announced, like, oh, I hope he's in it, or, you know, whatever.
Which is not a thing that I ever would have called. Like, Undertale is a cool game. I never would have imagined that it was big enough to get Nintendo's attention like that. And it's very cool that it did. I'm sure that Undertale, having come to the Switch not all that long ago, and then sold just a whole bunch of copies, did a whole lot to you know, move the needle a little bit there. But it wasn't just... that there are just an enormous amount of new characters and some new fighting modes coming to Super Smash Brothers, including this is just straight up fan service. There is now a battle mode that is just everyone's favorite pink puffy character. Mm-hmm. It is just a Kirby Battle Smash game mode that just removes any kind of logic barrier, because I've been in so many games where just like, you know, well, no, we all can't be Kirby, so everyone has to choose something else, and now everyone can be Kirby, and that's going to be its own level of madness. Like that's going to be, watching that is going to be painful, much less playing it.
Yeah, I mean, I basically only play Kirby and Pikachu, so yeah. I'm pretty stoked.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty funny to watch. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Also, an enormous, just a truckload of things for Pokemon Sword and Shield. We have...
Yes, I love the new Pokemon, Poltegeist.
I've never connected with a Pokemon so hard.
This is a ghost that lives inside of a teapot.
Yeah,
that is also liquid. I'm not going to bother trying to sort out any kind of logic there, but...
I think the Pokemon company said, like, you can drink it or something really odd.
What?
Yeah, you probably shouldn't do that.
No, yeah, it said you can drink it, but you might end up with an upset stomach. And I was like,
yeah, because it's a living thing. Don't drink the living thing. That's...
Does this lend credence to my theory that people just eat Pokemon?
They
even
might.
Though they're sentient creatures.
There's no way that doesn't happen.
They, like, absolutely. They cook Magikarp in the show.
That's true. They try. Well, they try to.
Well,
yeah.
But he's got too hard of a shell.
They use it, like, if you watch any of the shows or you dig into some of the games, they use Pokemon in like every other facet of their lives. Like you go to the power plants and the power plants are a bunch of Pokemon that are inside.
Exactly. They're
doing
like
stuff.
Slave labor.
Mm-hmm. All of the medical centers and you know, include Pokemon. Like there's no way that someone isn't eating Pokemon.
No, they totally eat them.
That's a
This is a fun anecdote, but in my senior lecture class in college, it was a utopian literature class, and we had to do a final project that was basically like, break down anything you want and explain why it's a utopia, and I chose Pokemon.
Nice.
And it worked out very well because it basically is a utopia.
Yeah, more or less. The elements to the game are starting to unfold. The Galar region is starting to get a little bigger. We're starting to learn a little more about the stuff that's going on there. And I was talking to Jez Corden about this. All of the food in the Galar region is curry based.
Yes.
Which is just kind of a silly, you know, fun anecdote that I enjoyed. It's good. There's a ton of new information coming, or that has been unveiled about the game. It's probably the last major announcement before the game launch for Pokemon Sword and Shield. It's unlikely that we'll get another, you know, huge vault of information.
You don't think we'll see
launch.
Like evolutions for the starters?
There have been so many people asking for it. It is like a big thing, but honestly, we're kind of close. We're what, like 6 weeks out now?
November.
Okay, so a little longer. So maybe we'll get one more next month. We'll get one more drop next month. But yeah, the like secondary and tertiary evolutions for any of the Pokemon in the Galar region have been a big thing that people have been asking for. And that's been very, very quiet so far. So that's a thing. And that has not stopped fan art. So much fan art, just kind of assuming what these evolutions are going to be. And there have been several places that have taken them seriously and been like, oh, these are the actual evolutions. Gotta be careful. There's those artists are tricksy.
Yeah. Another thing I really liked about this particular Pokemon announcement was just kind of how they really like fleshed out the world specifically. And I think it really gave a really good look into the new region and makes it feel like a real place almost, which the later Pokemon games have been doing a decent job of doing, but kind of continues here to a even larger extreme.
Yeah, absolutely. And very clearly themed after the United Kingdom with all of its designs. Like there's a lot of stuff to appreciate from the visualization there. I'm curious to see how far that goes as we get deeper into the game.
Although UK isn't really known for their curry, I don't think, but
it depends. That is a subtle cultural jab, but yeah. There are definitely a lot of curry places in the United Kingdom.
Right.
What else is particularly notable about the game, Jen?
Pokemon?
Yeah. Did we learn?
What was the new one? There's that bird Pokemon, and I can't remember the name to it. Cramorant? cormorant something. I don't know. It was this giant blue bird that like swallows stuff and spits it back out at you.
Yeah.
And then they detailed a lot of the customization stuff. Like you can change your eyebrows and get a haircut and change your outfit and everything.
Yeah, it's part of like a whole shopping experience. It's more than just going in and personalizing at the start. You can actually mid-game decide that you're just going to go and get a haircut.
Yeah, and different towns will have different boutiques with different items in it, so you won't always see the same inventory.
I can't wait to go shopping.
This was a big part of the last game too, where it was less about the personalization, but more about like lots of little things that encouraged you to go back and forth in between the towns. That wasn't just go battle in this gym, go shop from this Pokemart. Like there were kind of subtle collectible things that you could go and get from each one of the different towns, and they're clearly expanding on that in a way that will hopefully be more influential.
Yeah, this new Pokemon game is shaping up to be gigantic.
It's going to consume December.
Absolutely. More than December.
Yeah, it's going to be pretty fascinating. The last big thing from Nintendo is the totally don't call it a virtual store has been updated with 20 SNES games. None of which, by the way, were Mother 3.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody was listening when I first made that request a couple weeks ago. That's cool. We did get a bunch of them, including an SNES controller that you can order to play those games with, which I highly recommend if you have been playing with the virtual console and do not have one of the other controllers. It is weird playing a lot of these games with a joystick, and the D-pad on the Joy-Cons are not great.
Nope.
No.
So if you are excited about these games and you really want to like jump in and feel like you're playing these games, pick up the retro controllers that go with the Switch. They're not all that expensive, and they feel like the old school controller and make playing those games a whole lot more fun. You could alternately get a pro controller if you wanted to do more than just play these classic games. The D-pad on the pro controller is actually pretty good. And you can get all of the same button things there. But, there's just something about holding the classic SNES controller or the classic NES controller that just feels good. So,
yeah, plus, like, these games were built for an NES controller. So having to try and use another controller is, a challenge you probably don't want to deal with.
Especially if you're the type to just really dig in and want to try and, like, beat some of these older classic games. You're going to want that old feel of the controller in your hand.
Yeah, because like I started playing games later, so I missed a lot of like older games, and I never had a Nintendo console growing up, so that's even more games I missed. So I'm happy that a lot of these games are finally coming to a console in an official capacity, because most of the time they were available on like emulators and stuff, and I wasn't going to go looking for an old console on eBay or something. That wasn't something I had the energy for. So I really like that all these like games that were generally unplayable are now available. So my partner and I share a Switch, but I'm thinking of getting my own Switch just so I can play some of them.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, and the emulator for it is actually fairly modern. It's not just a put in and play and get the exact same experience from the original game. You can it has an almost DVR like feature to it that allows you to rewind and fast forward through some of your gameplay experiences for I think like 5 minutes of gameplay, which is super useful when you suck at Super Mario Brothers 3. And you jump into the wrong thing, and then you go, nope, let me go ahead and hit that DVR mode, and as though I am playing Prince of Persia, just kind of back up a little bit and try again. That same feature is available for the SNES games, which is pretty handy if you're kind of new and don't really want to burn through all of your lives the first time you play.
Yeah, we've gotten better over time at dealing with save game spots and things like that, so...
Yeah,
I'm glad there's something built into the system that helps with that a little bit.
Absolutely. So we're going to jump here and actually go into a separate previously recorded interview with Jen and I talking to Jez Corden about Monster Hunter Iceborne and Gears 5. But before we do, Carly and Jen, what are y'all playing this week?
Control.
Do you like it?
You're all about Control, huh?
I love it so much. It's like a game made for me, I swear.
Yeah, it was really good. I just earned the final... I realized I said trophy or achievement last time. It's trophies on PlayStation. I know I'm going to get like crucified for that.
Oh, no. Oh,
whatever. I finally earned the final trophy.
Yay. Yeah, I'm like a few hours in, so I'm not like super far in. Right. But it's just like the atmosphere this game builds is incredible.
Oh, yeah, and I love it.
The lore is just right up my alley. It's all basically it's like SCP, but in evolved, and I love it so much.
You can find a lot of Alan Wake references too if you
look. I was just about to mention Alan Wake, just like there's so many. I found a couple, but I know there's more, and it's just like
there's some hidden ones too where you need like later game powers to even access the areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely, I know about those. I'm not going to say them here just in case, because it's a spoiler, but I'm really excited to get to them. Because Alan Wake, as I've mentioned, is one of my favorite games, and I don't know why. And I'll say Control has a couple of issues that Alan Wake does for me, and that like the combat tends to get repetitive. And there definitely been some times where like I've died in the middle of combat because frame rate drops, and then I get sent back like so many rooms, and then I have to fight spawning enemies in that room all over again.
Oh yeah,
and that's just annoying, but. I love this game so much. I'm so excited it exists.
Jem, what are you playing this week?
Gears 5. Gonna make my way through my first Gears ever. Because as we found out, I'm a fake gamer. I haven't played a lot of games, apparently.
No.
It's fine.
You're fine. You've been playing lots of games. Yeah, Gears 5 is also my trip this week. Yeah, Borderlands next week. We're going to have a whole separate podcast where we dive in and talk about Gears 5, or when we talk about Borderlands 3. We're not allowed to talk about why Jen is mad about Borderlands 3 right now. we will be talking about that next week. So keep your ears peeled for that. But yeah, so Jen and I both are on the Gears 5 train for this week. And then we'll catch up on that next week. Carly, since we did this at the end of the podcast, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at VelociRaptor, which is just Velociraptor with an extra C, and across all the Mobile Nations websites.
All right. And we're going to leave here, and we'll be back in just a second.
With Gears of War, it's sort of like... It's interesting, actually, because the Coalition, head of the studio of the Coalition who, you know, makes Gears of War, he said to me that Gears' biggest strength is also its biggest weakness, in the sense that its format and its violence is sort of like what its fans expect, but it also constrains what the franchise can potentially be. So what they've tried to do with Gears 5 is try and introduce new features on top of the sort of signature cover third-person shooting gameplay that everyone knows what the franchise is, you know, what the franchise is known for, rather. And, so some of the new features in this game are sort of these wide linear levels, which you can explore on a sort of a sailboat skiff, they call it, sailing on the ice or the sand, because climate change is a thing on the planet of Sera. And I don't actually know why, but areas that were lush forests are now blasted with ice, and I think it has something to do with the unique ecology of the planet. I haven't really looked that deep into it, but you travel around on this skiff doing side quests and stuff, and that's new to the Gears franchise, and it just makes the world a bit more, you know, broader and deeper, more believable. And you go to like villages and you see like how people are living on this planet amidst all this war with this sort of monstrous threat, the Swarm, which you kill thousands and thousands of throughout the game in hilariously violent ways, which forms the basis of Gears of War's appeal, I guess. Standard Gears. So there's that. And also, I suppose another refinement they've sort of added is this sort of RPG-esque layer because you have like a robot companion which can be upgraded and modified, which gives you sort of abilities, which is something that Gears didn't have before either. Like previously in Gears, you basically, the only choice you had in terms of play style was the weapons you were using. And now there's a little bit more strategy, a little bit more intrigue in there, but like I said in my review, it's all still pretty rudimentary. It's clearly very fresh for the studio, and they didn't really push it out as deeply as perhaps they could have done. But I think it's a great step forward for the franchise, and, you know, it's interesting to say, like, I'm excited for the future of the franchise now, rather than just thinking of it like, oh, it's just another Gears.
Yeah, I totally get that. So, Jen, you and I are both only a little bit into this game so far.
Correct. You said
you're a little over an hour in. I think I'm right around the same. There's a great big intro to this thing that kind of walks you through this. You call it boot camp.
Yeah, it's like a tutorial, I guess. I don't know what to call it.
But it's not like an opt out thing. You know, it doesn't really matter. You kind of have to go through it. But it all feels like a Gears game. Like Jez is telling us this cool new stuff, but I love that it like, you know, I my first time playing Gears was entirely co-op, where I played through the entirety of Gears 1 in a day with my brother-in-law, and this takes me back to the Gears 1 experience. Like this feels like just a straight up, you know, run around and just mess people up. It doesn't kind of encourage you to jump into multiplayer right away. It doesn't really encourage you to like you want to explore the world and explore the story, at least from what I've seen so far, and I really dig that.
Yeah, I mean, after boot camp, it threw me into the menu where it's like you can do multiplayer, co-op, single player, all that stuff. I've never played a Gears game before. I know this is like, I'm a noob, this is blasphemy, I'm sorry. I'm really enjoying it. The boot camp level I could have done without. I would have rather the tutorial have been integrated in the campaign somehow instead of the separate entity itself before it even let me jump into the campaign. But other than that, it's really nice. I love the level design. The environments are gorgeous. I've only played Act 1, Chapter 1, whatever. It's beautiful. And I didn't expect that from Gears, honestly.
Speaking of the level design, Jez, you actually wrote a separate article that talked a little bit about the Gears team kind of flirting with ray tracing with the design for this, both in the PC and the Xbox version of the game.
Yeah, so, like, I don't know a huge amount of how ray tracing was implemented in Gears 5, but, like, don't expect it to be literally everywhere. Like, what they've done is they sort of, they very cleverly, that's hard to say, at least if you mean, but they cleverly sort of create these set-piece scenes where the idea is that they are beautiful. Like there's a part where you walk through like an ice forest, and there isn't a lot going on during those segments. But like what the team does is during those segments where it's sort of slower paced, and maybe there's a conversation going on, and the idea is that it's driving you towards a story, they ramp up the visuals in that scene to sort of, I don't know, add, you know, visual depth to the game and stuff like that. And it's in those scenes where I think like ray tracing is used more effectively. Like you'll get like more dynamic reflections on the ice, or they specifically said they were using ray tracing for faraway shadows bound to the GPU rather than the CPU. It's not sort of like all pervasive throughout the whole game, I don't think.
Sure.
But it's sort of like it's used cleverly to enhance specific scenes and stuff like that. So,
well, and that's a killer first step, right? Like to see, you know, the kind of initial step there is a great way to you know, slowly bring this stuff to not just, you know, what we expect in games, but also just, you know, kind of slowly introduce this to consoles.
Yeah, for sure. Ray tracing is basically the next step for, you know, the next graphical leap. We had like resolution, 60 frames per second, and then, you know, we had HDR, which, you know, enhances lighting on the compatible television sets. The next step is ray tracing, which will bring a sort of realistic dynamism to shadows, reflections, you know, explosions and all that sort of stuff. Because at the moment, all shadows and reflections generally are fake or using like trickery to, you know,
right,
make it seem real and stuff like that. So it's exciting to see the first elements of it, but it's really next gen where it'll sort of come into its own, I think.
It's really kind of fascinating when you get kind of this behind the scenes look at how these things are kind of assembled to so that we can enjoy them on a 2D screen. And then you kind of get a feel for the trickery that goes into that. I will never, ever forget the first time I got really excited about Skyrim coming to VR. And they set up Skyrim. They were like, yeah, go ahead and do this. But they never changed any of the render models for anything. So the stuff that was like 2D trickery to make it look like a 3D thing still existed in the game. So when you walk through it, there are trees that are like these weird crosshatch cutout things.
That's amazing.
Like they were pop-up figure trees. And so like you walk past them in VR and you're like, why? That looks awful. Why didn't you fix that? Because the render engine was still the same. And on a 2D screen, that looks amazing. And so a lot of what you're talking about there, ray tracing is going to, it adds that level of realism. And so they don't have to rely on those tricks, but it ends up being pretty GPU intensive. So it's something we'll see way more of with the next generation of consoles and PCs. But it's super cool to see these, especially for a big game like this, to start to think about how it can be used in so many different ways, because it's going to be such a big deal. But I like that it's not something that we're just going to immediately slam into. Like, the big deal isn't going to be this game is ray tracing. And that, like, I don't want that to be the feature in the game. I still want the game to be fun. So it makes me happy that game developers and publishers are kind of doing this kind of slow crawl towards it. That makes me really happy.
I think they'll use it mostly for like set pieces and specific scenes that call on having good reflections and shadows, like moody ambience and stuff like that. I don't think it'll be pervasive across everything until maybe the generation after, because as you say, it is super hardware intensive. So, but yeah, baby steps, eh?
I remember the first 3D game I played. PlayStation really wants ray tracing on the next one. And
I'm sure that they're super excited about talking about it.
Yeah, I don't know if it's...
That's going to be realistic. Their big thing. I'm positive with the next console is there's going to be some kind of weird percentage, and that's going to be the thing, right? Like this game is blank percent rendered with ray tracing.
Yeah,
that's
sure.
going to be like their brag point. That's because that's undoubtedly how that shakes out, and that's just so boring to me. I don't care about that percentage point. Show me a thing that's pretty, and show me a thing that plays well.
Yeah.
But I don't care what percentage of it was ray traced.
Microsoft kind of has a little advantage there. Because the current technology for ray tracing is all based on Microsoft's DirectX packages and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I don't doubt Sony's going to have it, but I'm just wondering, will it be hardware accelerated ray tracing, which is what Microsoft hinted at?
Yeah, I think that's going to be an interesting conversation to see that go forward. I'm also, if you're ever curious about kind of dynamic light rendering stuff, and you want to learn more about it, just as a personal thing, when Pixar released Big Hero 6, they did this huge deep dive into the massive rendering farm that went into creating all of the lighting for Big Hero 6, because it was the first thing that they'd ever done where all of the lighting was rendered in real time to give Baymax that like weird glowy look. And it is kind of a precursor to ray tracing, is how they built that render farm to make it work so that it wasn't just fixed lighting. Like, the lighting was actually dynamically rendered in the scenes. And they did a ton of like behind the scenes video stuff. And some of that is showing the massive render farm that's like, it's like a room that's got like 6,000 computers in it that are all just, you know, stacked with, you know, dual GPU rigs and things like that. And they needed every bit of processing power from those things to get all of the rendering that they needed for Big Hero 6. So if you have any idea, if you're curious about what we mean when we say that this is going to be resource intensive, you know, that is a good kind of first glance at the kind of work that's being done there. It's obviously going to be different when we start working with ray tracing system in games, but like it's the way that we look at lighting from a technical perspective is very different from the people who just sit down and turn on a game and go, hey, this is pretty. it's really fascinating to hear those engineers talk about it. How much of the game have you played through by now, Jez? Are you finished with Gears 5?
Oh, yeah, I completed it for review. It's not super long. It's about...
Okay.
It took me about 14 hours on hard difficulty to go through, and they recommend... They want you to play in hard difficulty. That's how it's been designed, apparently.
Okay.
So I thought, yeah, I'll do it on that difficulty. But I got everything, or mostly everything, and about two-thirds of the collectibles, and it took me about 14 hours. So I think that's probably about average, I would say. I'm sure there'll be speedrunners who do it even quicker than that, but...
Sure, and then you'll have collectible hunters that'll jump through and play for 20 hours to find everything. So
yeah.
that sounds like, you know, a pretty solid spin-off. And then like any Gears game, there's a solid online component for multiplayer combat.
Yes, there's a Left 4 Dead mode now, a sort of arena PvE mode in Horde, and you've got multiplayer hardcore mode, which is sort of like how it's always been, the sort of team-based matches and stuff like that. But then on top of that, there's also this new arcade PvP mode, which is a lot more accessible. And if you've never played Gears versus mode, like to any sort of competitive level like me, arcade's far more accessible and fun, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm excited about arcade because as much as I love the Gears story, I'm so bad at the multiplayer.
Yeah, so am I.
I'm just so bad at it.
The way like arcade enhances or makes its multiplayer more accessible is it sort of uses a Call of Duty like spawning system. So in the core playlist, people always spawn at their spawn in their base and then, you know, move out as a group. I guess more like Overwatch, sort of, to just compare it to something off the top of my head. But in arcade mode, people sort of spawn around in a circle, which is more like Call of Duty, which, you know, if you're on a losing streak, the way you spawn can give you an advantage. And that's one of the reasons why Call of Duty got so popular, is because it was one of the first games to sort of use this spawning system, which, you know, could give any sort of player a decent advantage and creates this sort of... you know, it's just more accessible like that. And I think because of that, Gears Arcade will probably on-ramp more people into the regular versus mode and competitive and ranked mode and stuff like that. So, and they're doing all sorts of esports things as well, like everyone apparently is now. So,
can't ignore it, can't avoid it.
I can avoid it.
Let's switch away for a little bit. The other game that you've been very excited about this week has been Monster Hunter Iceborne.
Yeah, and I'm actually playing it right now.
You're playing it right now as you're talking to us. That's awesome.
I can't put it down. It's just incredible. Monster Hunter is like, it's got such a passionate fan base, but it seems to be like really polarizing. Like some people I know just like they won't even give it a chance because it's so different. It's not, and there's so many menus and so much learning curve and stuff like that. But my God, for a $40 expansion, this has so much damn content. Like, I have no clue how this didn't end up just being a sequel, because there's just so much here. It's like a full new story that's like dozens of hours long, tons of new monsters, new moves for every weapon, like. New rendering engine too, like it looks a bit prettier on Xbox One X and PlayStation 4 Pro. It's crazy how much they've put into this, and that's on top of free updates they've been doing for the last year and a half, and they've already announced the next free update for the game as well, bringing back like fan favorite monsters, because the franchise is 15 years old now.
If you watch any of the developer diaries for the making of Iceborne, it just feels from beginning to end like a love letter to fans.
Yeah.
They clearly were like, you know, this, how can we make this game better to keep people playing, you know, the people that actually love the game. And you're right. It does have kind of a steep learning curve to start. Like when you pick up Monster Hunter World, it's got, you know, kind of a learning curve to it. But I dig that it has kind of those classic MMO feels to them. Like it has the irony of WoW Classic having dropped recently is that it has feelings that are not totally dissimilar from WoW Classic
in that kind of depth.
It doesn't hold your hand. No, it drops you into the it drops you into the crucible. But it's got, you know, it's a beautiful game. It has always been, and it's you know, now that it's updated for One X and Pro, it definitely kind of takes things a little farther. But it's just a lot. Like there's always been just so much depth to this game.
It's crazy. Like I think off the top of my head, there's 14 weapon types. I think each one of those has like different play styles within each weapon. Like you can customize every aspect of your play style. It's not like Destiny where like every class has a grenade that's slightly different and stuff like that. It's like every class handles completely differently with different combos and different builds on top of those different weapons. And each class has like, I don't know, well over 10 different weapons to choose from in in-game stuff. And yeah, there is a meta. If you want to do specific, if you want to like, you know, do speed runs and stuff, there are like best builds and stuff like that. But, you know, it's one of the only games I've played where you don't have to run a cookie cutter build to be viable. It's like the balance is really impeccable and I love it. I will never stop playing it and I'll play it forever and it'll be on my gravestone.
This is going to be your version of Phantasy Star Online, which is a deep cut for people who remember that ridiculous game. The big thing you touched on already was the variety of build choices. We've kind of shifted from like the gaming community as a whole. You look at games like Diablo 3 and Destiny and some of the other games that have that kind of MMO feel. They're all just super, super, you know, cookie cutter and straightforward. And you can just look online and be like, yep, this is the build I need. And then you just kind of work towards those parts and jump in. But is there really a significant difference in particularly Iceborne if you go with one of those builds between, you know kind of a power build and something that you've kind of designed yourself knowing what you're comfortable with?
I mean, yeah, I kind of. It's really hard to explain in a shorthand sort of way. But like, for example, I like playing with Gunlances and they're sort of like, it's hard to describe because there's really nothing like it. Basically, it's a giant gun with a sword attached to it, and then you also have a shield as well. And you can sort
hard
of
to go
like,
wrong.
Yeah, you can sort of play it like really offensively using the gun part of the lance, or you can play it like more defensively using the shield more, and then like you can drill down even further. There's three different types of Gunlance: one that excels at a certain type of shooting, and another one that has better range, and one that's more like a shotgun. And then there are builds specific to each one of those types of Gunlances, and that's just like one weapon type. I haven't even really gone into any of the other weapons because like Gunlance alone is keeping me busy. It's crazy how much stuff there is in this game. There's like a weapon that's a musical instrument, and you play it.
I saw that.
Like Rock Band or something. And you have to, the combos you do create different melodies which buff your team like a bard on steroids. And it's like, oh, and your musical instrument is also a giant hammer which can smash monsters in the face. It's just incredible. There's like nothing like it. And in Japan, it's as big as Pokemon, I'm told.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. The original Monster Hunter is massive in several Asian markets. It just continued to be explosive. And just on not weirdly not divided by console either. Like it was super popular on everything. Which is super cool. If you want to check out more stuff about Iceborne or Gears 5, Windows Central has just a ton of stuff that we've already written so far about it, and will continue to do so because there's just so much going on for both of these games. Jem, what are you thinking about Iceborne?
I beat Monster Hunter World right after it came out. I reviewed it for the site I was working at the time. I haven't dove into Iceborne yet. I didn't get it. I think it's great, like what Jez said, that they're making such an expansive DLC. Because you don't see that too often, or you'll see it and it's like, oh, here's this standalone thing, here's a full sequel, blah, blah, blah. Like Borderlands 2, when they went to the pre-sequel, I think that could have been DLC itself, no offense to the pre-sequel. But I love seeing the expansive content people are doing, and I think it's great that they're adding new monsters. You mentioned that musical weapon. Is that new to Iceborne, or was that in the base game?
That was in the base game. It's the hunting horn.
Oh, I don't remember it. I used the glaive all the time, and you could like launch yourself in the air and just launch yourself across the battlefield.
They've like taken some inspiration, because they did like the whole Final Fantasy DLC for Monster Hunter World, and they've taken like some inspiration from the, because they added a bunch of dragoon stuff, like armor and stuff from Final Fantasy 14. And the insect glaive now has some of the moves that dragoons have, like the jump stuff, and they added new moves to every weapon too. So it's like if you got bored of doing the same thing over and over again, Now there's like right. every weapon has new weapon combos and moves and stuff like that. Oh, it's just so much stuff.
No, that's amazing. I'm going to have to get it because I never expected to like Monster Hunter World as much as I did. I had never played the series. When I first played it, I was unfamiliar with the series for the most part. It was a lot of fun. And that surprised me. I just didn't expect it from a game like that, where I normally gravitate to these like big blockbuster games with great stories like Uncharted, The Last of Us, stuff like that. And Monster Hunter World's not that, but it's so fun.
Yeah, it's like the story is definitely sort of a secondary pillar in Monster Hunter.
Yeah, definitely.
But like, even though the story's a little bit, I don't know, rudimentary, shall we say, some of the cinematics in this game are just absolutely stunning. Even though like what's going on sort of maybe doesn't make the most sense a lot of
right,
the time.
Right, yeah, it's gorgeous.
Or like the lore is a bit, shall we say, loose. But the choreography and the designs and the graphics, and it's just like I don't know what's going on, but I'm excited by it. But like,
yeah, it's amazing.
The lore is there though, if you want it. Like my brother's got 800 hours played in Monster Hunter World, and he got really into it and researched all the lore and all the monsters and, you know, what the Fifth Fleet is and all that sort of stuff. So another cool thing in Iceborne they've added is a Pokemon Snap minigame, sort of.
Oh, I saw you talking about that, yeah.
I couldn't believe it, because like that's not in there's loads of little things that aren't in any of the trailers that I've just been discovering as I've been playing. And like there's now a camera in the game, and there's a whole quest chain where it's like, I want you to get a photograph of this specifically in this situation. And it's just like Pokemon Snap, if you ever played that on the 64 back in the day. It's incredible.
I have not, but I know what you're talking about.
It's just crazy how much stuff is in this game.
That's fantastic. I love that. All right, Jez, where can people find you online if they want to see more of the cool things you're doing right now?
Well, right on WindowsCentral.com, and I'm on Twitter at JZCORDEN, where I mostly tweet memes, and you probably shouldn't follow me, actually.
But you should definitely follow him. That's where you shared the picture of your Gunlance character and just this massive shield that has a beard on the front of it that I stared at for way too long. It was a very cool looking design.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Like, I made this Gunlance and it's got a beard on it.
Yeah, just on the shield, not like on the character. The shield itself has its own beard. It is just very funny. The designs for the characters in this, they definitely lean very heavy fantasy, and it's very fun. What about you, Jen? Where can people find you?
JenLock95 on Twitter. LOCKE, because everyone spells my last name wrong. Even when I spell it for them.
RIP.
Yeah, I know.
All right. I am at Russell Holly on everything. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. And if you have anything else that you want us to talk about for future episodes, be sure to hit up podcast@androidcentral.com and we will do the thing, or we won't. It really depends on what you suggest. So suggest good things and we'll do it. We'll talk to y'all later.
Bye.
See ya.